Hello, and welcome to the reading of the Waterloo Cedar Falls Courier for Thursday, May 9th, 2024. I'm your reader, Grace Barter. A $9.5 million expansion at People's Clinic is complete after 2 years and will allow for more desperately needed services. An open house for the clinic's new 20,000 square foot wing was held Tuesday. Community members toured the new behavioral health, urgent care, and adult services areas. The expansion also allows for a larger pharmacy that includes a drive-up window. The clinic will soon provide mammography services as well. Planning for the project began in 2019 and ground broke in 2022. The new section opened for business during the winter. The original estimated cost of the project was $4 million, but with the COVID-19 pandemic, supply chain shortages, and inflation, that number more than doubled. Christine Kemp, the clinic's CEO, said the opening was a dream. Individual donations tallied up to more than $40,000. The clinic also received federal, state, and city funding, as well as money from local trusts and foundations. Kemp described People's Clinic as a safety net for people needing medical treatment. Waterloo Mayor Quentin Hart, who cut the ribbon for the grand opening, said the clinic was vastly important to the community during the pandemic. Kemp said the biggest push for the expansion was the growing need for mental health services in the area. The clinic provided the services, but the space was inadequate. The behavioral health department was stuffed in a corner with very few windows. Angela Conrad, the director of behavioral health operations, said many patients described it as a cave. Now, staff have offices with natural light and comfortable seating. With the extra space, the clinic hired two more therapists. There are now 5 therapists, 5 social workers, 2 nurse practitioners, and 4 nurses providing care. The increase in staff now allows the clinic to see more patients. Kemp said with the stigma changing around mental health, awareness only does so much if there is no access to care. With 30 years of mental health work under her belt, Conrad said the need for mental health services is growing rapidly. The center is also offering homeless outreach services, which can provide care as well as clothing and sanitary products to people needing help. Along with the increase of patients at the behavioral health clinic, the health center is seeing an influx of people coming into the new urgent care. Kemp said COVID-19 made them realize the importance of separating sick patients from the healthy. That made them change their plans to create a separate urgent care entrance accessible from the outside, with urgent care in large red letters on the exterior. Urgent care is a walk-in clinic, but it is not for cases that need life-threatening emergency room-type care. It is also used as a place people can go if they are not able to make an appointment with their primary care provider. There are 1 or 2 providers who switch every 4 hours, as well as 2 nurses and 1 aide. The area has multiple exam rooms and 1 treatment room, which allows for things like OBGYN inspections or small stitches. Urgent care will also offer medication-assisted treatment for people with opioid addictions. Robin Johnson, a quality nurse, said she is humbled by how much the community helped to improve the space. The clinic also updated its adult services area, which focuses on family and internal medicine. There are 12 exam rooms, 1 surgical room, and a nurse's station. The exam rooms are 50% bigger, allowing for people with mobility needs to use the room. The clinic has been around since 1976 after starting in the basement of Antioch Baptist Church. The current building, 905 Franklin Street, was constructed in 1999. It is now more than 60,000 square feet. Law enforcement officers who died in the line of duty will be remembered during a ceremony Wednesday. Cedar Falls Public Safety will host the annual Peace Officers Memorial Service for Black Hawk County at Overman Park, 316 West 3rd Street in Cedar Falls. The ceremony will begin at 10 a.m. and parking is available around Overman Park and in front of City Hall. Black Hawk County area law enforcement officers killed in the line of duty include Adam Little in 2015, Waterloo Police Department officer who suffered a heart attack following a shift in which he responded to a burglary in progress and a shots fired call. Lance Deitch, 1989, Iowa State Patrol trooper originally from Waterloo, died when the patrol aircraft he was flying in a search mission crashed in Cass County. Charles Whitney, in 1985, a state patrol trooper, died June 16th when he was struck by a car on Interstate Highway 380 near the River Forest Road exit in Evansdale. William Mulliken, in 1981, Detective Sergeant with the Black Hawk County Sheriff's Office, died in a two-car accident July 14th while answering a call. Wayne Rice, 1981, Waterloo police officer shot by James T-Bone Taylor on July 12th. Michael Hoeing, 1981, Waterloo police officer shot by James T-Bone Taylor on July 12th. Gabriel LaFramboy, 1976, a LaPorte City police officer killed December 9th when his vehicle collided with a semi-trailer rig during a high-speed chase. William Melhorn, in 1956, a Waterloo police officer shot by a burglar fleeing from the scene of the crime in January. Everett Dutcher, in 1945, Cedar Falls police officer who was assisting firefighters when the fire truck he was on collided with a train. W. Faye Dilworth, in 1932, a Black Hawk County Sheriff's deputy shot while attempting to serve a rape warrant. Vinton Margretz, 1925, a Waterloo police officer who died in a motorcycle accident while responding to a call. William Goodenboer, 1920, a Waterloo detective, shot while questioning a suspect about a forged check. Fred Widman, 1908, a Waterloo police officer killed during regular patrol downtown, and John Bailey from 1902, a Waterloo police officer who was operating a team of horses attached to a buggy while on the job when a passing streetcar frightened the team and the officer was thrown. A Cedar Falls couple has been arrested after police found deplorable living conditions in a mobile home last week. Amanda K. Farrell, 36, and Thomas William Meeker, 38, were arrested Friday for three counts each of misdemeanor child endangerment. According to court records, police received a tip on April 28th that three children at their home at 5505 Peridot Road, Lot 61, would go days without food and didn't have running water. Officers arrived and found the odor of rotting garbage and food and feces in the home. There were insects in the home, and the bathtub was filled with feces and urine, records state. The trailer was in such a condition, officers called for the fire department to come in protective clothing to document the scene, records state. Investigators found children's toys and clothing at the home. The parents said the children were living at another location with a relative. Officers went to the relative's residence but didn't see any of the children's belongings there, records state. A man running from police jumped in the Cedar River in an attempt to escape early Wednesday morning. Waterloo firefighters ended up rescuing him from the water. He was taken to a local hospital and then turned over to police. The incident started shortly before 2:50 a.m. when police officers saw Christopher Allen Peake, 33 in a vehicle in the 400 block of Sycamore Street, had a warrant for a parole violation in another matter. When officers approached, Peek ran off on foot, making his way to the Park Avenue Bridge construction project, police said. Peek then jumped into the river and was able to grab onto the safety chains extending down from the bridge. He continued to hold on until crews with Waterloo Fire Rescue arrived and tossed him a rope and brought him ashore. This is the second time Peek has fallen into peril while fleeing police. On April 19th, officers attempted to detain him on warrants at Suburban Studios, 2056 LaPorte Road. He jumped from a third-story window in an attempt to get away and injured himself, according to court records. A historic Waterloo church on an endangered list is once again the target of vandals. Police said a man broke into Mount Moriah Missionary Baptist Church, 633 Walnut Street of Waterloo, and removed fixtures that were later sold as scrap metal, including a plaque honoring a World War I veteran. Authorities allege 39-year-old Jake Raymond Dale Grinstead was living inside the 113-year-old church in late April. On April 29th, police were called to a report of a burglary at the address. They found items had been removed from the building, but no one was inside. The following morning, workers at Push Iron and Metals called police after two people attempted to sell what appeared to be metal headstones. Employees suspected they were stolen. Investigators determined Grinstead was one of the people at the scrapyard, according to court records. They also matched the World War I plaque with other items from the scrapyard with bare spots on the church wall, records state. Police arrested Grinstead for third-degree burglary, fifth-degree theft, and theft of a veteran's grave marker. Bond was set at $10,000. Mount Moriah was listed on the National Register of Historic Places in 2011. It was built in 1911 as Grace Methodist Episcopal Church. In 2017, Preservation Iowa listed the church as one of the organization's most endangered historical buildings in the state. In 2022, a contractor that had been hired to repair and maintain parts of the building allegedly removed copper gutters, pipes, and other fixtures and sold them as scrap. Anthony Joseph Tucker pleaded to felony theft in the case and was placed on probation and ordered to pay restitution. John Walter Spooner took the stand in his own defense on Tuesday, giving his account of what happened in the hours leading up to the fire that killed his longtime friend. Spooner of Denver had been staying with Tony Greider in August 2022 while awaiting medical appointments in Waterloo for hepatitis. Greider's East 2nd Street home caught fire on the morning of August 19, 2023, and Greider, 60, died of smoke inhalation and burns. During the investigation, police found surveillance footage from a nearby church and cell phone video taken by a neighbor showing Spooner meandering the street before the blaze, sometimes tossing a gas can, sometimes flicking a lighter, and occasionally muttering something about fire. Videos show him approaching the house, returning to the street, and then flames erupting from the house minutes later. Police charged Spooner with first-degree murder, alleging he killed Greider while committing arson. Spooner, now 61, said he had known Greider since they were 8 years old, and in recent years he had been living with Greider on and off. Greider had two other roommates, and he held his home out to be a sober living facility, although testimony hinted it was light on the sober part. Fire officials described the home as a hoarder-type house. Spooner, who admitted to using meth, said he had been up for 2 or 3 days. On the night of August 17, 2022, he and Greider had gone fishing. The following day, Greider and others were working on a pickup truck in the front yard while Spooner said he was cleaning up around the house. He said at some point in the day, an acquaintance of one of Greider's roommates became involved in an argument and threatened to set the house on fire. On the night of August 18, 2022, Spooner said he remained awake and was cleaning the kitchen while others in the house went to sleep sometime after midnight. He said he didn't have a bed and tried to sleep on the dining room floor to avoid bed bugs that infested the home. He also said that people who had been kicked out of the house as part of an argument over the purchase and use of drugs sneaked back inside and were messing with him. He said he took two cigarettes out of his fishing tackle box and then discovered his lighter didn't work, so he went to a nearby gas station to look for a new one. The gas station was closed, so he sat on the steps by the church and eventually returned, which is when he encountered his neighbor who was filming him with her camera. He said he began acting weird so she wouldn't bother him. He said he told her he was calling the Navy to blow up the church parking lot. "I was just saying something crazy, trying to make her leave," Spooner said. After she pulled away, he said he went up to Greider's house and noticed a small ring of fire burning on a mat on the porch near a gas can. He said he hurled the gas can from the porch to keep it away from the fire, and then he put a tote on the flames. "The fire went out," he said. He said he walked back across the street and sat on a step where he nodded off. When he awoke, he noticed fire coming from Greider's house, according to his account. He said he ran up to the home and started yelling, but he didn't call 911 because he didn't have a phone and he didn't think to run to the fire station, which was about two blocks away. He said he didn't pour any gas on the porch and didn't set the fire. Defense attorney Nicole Watt asked Spooner about comments about serpents he had made to others who escaped the burning house. "Sometimes I get paranoid. I got bit by a rattlesnake one time, and every time I get paranoid, I start seeing snakes," Spooner said. "And when you use methamphetamine, does it?" Watt asked. "Yeah," Spooner replied. "I know that it's my paranoia." He also said he was paranoid when he was detained by police and placed in a holding cell. He said he thought someone was in the basement below the cell trying to shoot him through the floor drain. Much of the preceding testimony pitted fire experts for the state who said the fire started with gasoline on the porch against fire experts for the defense who said the fire started in the living room, possibly with an electric short. Waterloo's animal control operations could fall into the Waterloo Police Department's hands after discussions on Monday. The City Council held a work session where Police Chief Joe Leibold proposed changes in how the city responds to stray, abandoned, or sick animals. The Animal Control Division is assigned under the Public Works Division. There is currently one full-time and two part-time staff. Before December, there were two full-time and three part-time staff. Leibold is considering moving animal control to his department. He said the change would allow for more efficiency in services, more availability from the police department when needed, and increase the hours and days that residents could call animal control. Animal control officers would also have access to expanded computer resources that are unique to the police and legal departments. The move would keep the two animal control officer positions, but add an animal control sergeant and animal control specialist. The sergeant would provide legal expertise, while the specialist would act as a supervisor. These two new positions would be sworn officers. If moved to the police department, the budget for animal control services could increase about $200,000 to $636,000 for the new positions, training, and other expenses. Under Public Works The budget is $439,895,000. Both budgets include $100,000 for the Cedar Bend Humane Society. The Humane Society estimated it would cost $650,000 for them to take over the animal control services. Ward 2 Council member Dave Beeson wasn't sold on the idea, saying a lot of the situation is up in the air. Leibold and employees at the Public Works Department agreed there is still a lot to be discussed. Other items at the regular meeting, the council awarded a bid to Bituminous Materials and Supply in the amount of $321,490 for seal coating, and they approved a rezoning of 1515 Sycamore Street to allow for the redevelopment of the former Rath Administration Building for 87 senior housing apartments. Following an hours-long discussion Monday, the Cedar Falls City Council approved a $389,994 contract with ASPRO Incorporated to continue work on the Orchard Hill Park Pickleball Courts expansion at 1701 Primrose Drive. Residents for and against the project filled the council chambers and a portion of the overflow area, waiting to weigh in on the decision. Some residents of the Orchard Hill neighborhood affected by the project wore green ribbons on their chests to show opposition, while others, many of them members of the Cedar Falls Pickleball Club, wore pickleball t-shirts to show support. Six council members were present in person, and council member Gil Schultz joined virtually. The project, which includes doubling the number of pickleball courts from 8 to 16, an expanded parking lot, a new shelter, and stormwater installations, met with stiff opposition from neighbors who have concerns about the noise and safety issues it could create, as well as its impact on their property values. During staff comments, Recreation and Community Programs Manager Mike Sopp addressed some of these concerns. "We want to be good neighbor as a city," Sopp said. "Noise is a real concern. That's why we will be installing acoustic fencing on the west side of the courts, the area closest to the houses, to dampen the sound." Sopp said widening the entrance and adding a sidewalk will help alleviate traffic and safety concerns. Discussion about the project began when members of the Pickleball Club approached the city staff in July of 2022. Under normal circumstances, similar projects would take about 5 years to be realized, Sopp said. In order to speed up the process, the club raised funds and secured grants for the courts, adding $225,000 toward the nearly $500,000 estimated project budget. More than 20 residents addressed the council Monday night. Kathy Oakland, who lives near the park, asked the council to postpone a decision on the bid to conduct a formal noise study and seek more community input. Brian Bonner, whose property is adjacent to the existing parking lot, urged the council to proceed in a thoughtful manner, suggesting other sites be considered and a real sound study be done. But his main concern is safety. "That parking lot is going to be close to the small children's playground," he said. "The need to fence that playground, no one seemed to be addressing that." Ward Stubbs, former director of human and leisure services for the city, pointed out that many of the city's most successful projects met with opposition in their initial phases, including the Falls Aquatic Center, the Paw Park, and the trail along Cottage Row Road. He urged the council to move ahead with the project. Charles Blair Broker, who described himself as a happy but mediocre pickleball player, is past president of the Pickleball Club. He spoke vehemently in support of the project and the work the club has done to bring it to fruition. Councilman Darrell Cruz said he was leaning toward pausing the process and suggested other possible sites for an even bigger pickleball complex, such as Birdsall Park or near Aldrich Elementary School. "To me, everything's on the table," he said. Councilwoman Kelly Dunn said, "We took their money," referring to the pickleball club's contributions. "If we delay this, think of how we would look. Who would want to work with us? The council voted 5-1 to approve the contract with the Waterloo Company. Cruz was the only dissenter. Schultz's connection was lost, so his vote was not captured. ASPRO submitted the lowest of the three bids received. Vith Construction Corporation bid $435,145 and Peterson Construction bid $477,939. "Now we go back to the contractor and give them the green light," Sopp said. "Work will start when school gets out and will hopefully be done over the summer." In other business, a $6.24 million contract with Peterson Contractors of Rhinebeck for reconstruction of West Viking Road and nearby trails. The road will be reconstructed from Production Drive to Union Road. The project would also extend Innovation Drive to Viking Road and construct a roundabout at the future intersection. Work is expected to start this summer with major work completed by Thanksgiving. A preliminary plat for the Panther West additions, which would include 131 single-family home lots north of Bess Streeter Aldrich Elementary School and south of Green Hill Road. Plats for the Pinnacle Prairie Commercial South Phase 6 along Viking Road near the New Viridian Credit Union and Unity Point Clinic at Brandolin Boulevard. The 3.6-acre area includes three commercial lots. A $7,995 contract with Benton's Sand and Gravel Incorporation for demolition of a structure at 1218 Cottage Row Road, and a $19,000 contract with Lehman Trucking and Excavating for demolition of a structure at 523 West First Street. Hickory Hills Park will replace its decade-old tornado siren despite talks of switching to mobile-only alerts. The Black Hawk County Board of Supervisors voted 4-1 on Tuesday to replace the siren, which failed its last test. Supervisor Dan Trelka voted against it. Black Hawk County has six sirens. The one at Hickory Hills is the oldest, estimated to be installed in the 1970s. The replacement would cost around $28,000. Mindy Benson, the county's emergency management coordinator, presented two ideas to the board: replace the siren or take it out of commission and have parkgoers receive mobile alerts on their phone. The idea to stop using tornado sirens is not unique to Black Hawk County. She said some counties, like Clinton County, are thinking of getting rid of their county-run sirens. She noted that most people already have mobile alerts on their phone for weather, either from news outlets or nationwide emergency alerts. Since the siren is currently out of commission, the park has signs with QR codes for people to download Alert Iowa, a state-run app that alerts users of weather, emergencies, or public safety issues. Trelka was against the repair, stating that most people have phones and that many people ignore tornado sirens going off anyway. The other supervisors noted that people at the park could be away from their phone while fishing, kayaking, or on the trails. Cell phone reception can also be spotty. Supervisor Linda Leyland wanted to hear more from park rangers before making a decision, but Rory Geving, the county's maintenance supervisor, urged them to vote on something because camping season has started. No timeline was provided for the implementation of the new siren, but until then, parkgoers can use the Alert Iowa app. You are listening to the reading of the Waterloo Cedar Falls Courier for Thursday, May 9th, 2024 on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. The Waterloo Board of Education has approved its first union contract and is in the bargaining process for another two. The three-year agreement between the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees, Local 2749, and the Waterloo Community School District received approval during a special meeting last week. The union represents 213 district staff members in areas including custodial, maintenance, food service, and campus monitors. Every worker will receive a 60-cent raise in their hourly base wage, a 3.01% increase. Wages on the new salary schedules range from $18.98 to $29.37 per hour, depending on position and years with the district. There are additional hourly increases based on job certifications and leadership roles that generally range from 10 cents to $1. Each salary schedule also includes a 1 cent hourly increase annually for longevity after 3 years of continuous service. The base wages will reopen in the 25-26 and 2026-27 school years. The approved contract was with AFSCME's initial offer. The Waterloo Education Association, which represents 840 teachers, counselors, and family support workers, has come to a tentative agreement with the district. The tentative agreement has not been made public. The WEA initially proposed a 5-year contract with a base wage raise of $1,600, an approximately 12% increase. Negotiators cited legislation that increases minimum pay for teachers. The current starting wage for someone with a bachelor's degree and no prior professional experience is $48,000. The top of the wage scale for someone with 15 years of experience, a master's degree, and 45 additional credits is $84,000. There are additional longevity increases of $450 to $1,650 per year for employees with 18 to 23 years of experience. The new law increases the minimum pay for beginning teachers from $33,500 to $47,500 in the coming school year and to $50,000 in 2025 to 26. It also sets a minimum salary of $60,000 for teachers with at least 12 years of experience and would increase that to a minimum of $62,000 in 2 years. The state will allocate $63.4 million during the coming school year for teacher and education support personnel salaries and $83.2 million for the 2025-26 school year, according to a Legislative Services Agency fiscal note. Proposal also asked for the district to expand the WEA contract to include language for potential situations that may arise and would not be subject to individual interpretation. The permissive language was previously removed after state law changed in 2017, reducing the requirements for public employee contracts. The district's current contract is 8 pages long, while other similarly sized districts have contracts of more than 40 pages. The district countered the proposal with an offer to boost the base wage by $60 and advancement for another year of experience in a 1-year contract, a 2.04% total package increase. No additional contract language was proposed. The Waterloo Education Support Personnel, which covers 461 secretaries, homeschool workers, clerk typists, paraeducators, study hall monitors, and behavior intervention specialists, has also come to a tentative agreement. The WESP's initial proposal was for a five-year contract with a base pay increase of 65 cents per hour and advancement for experience each year. At the end of 5 years, starting pay for paraeducators would be $20 per hour. It also included adding back into the contract all permissive topics of bargaining. The current salary range is $16.73 to $18.04 per hour on the 8-step schedule. There are longevity increases of 8 cents per hour for each year after that and another 50 cents per hour every 4 years. Differential rates of 25 cents to $1.35 per hour are added based on position. There are also incentives of 25 to 65 cents per hour for educational advancement. The district's initial proposal to the union was for a one-year contract with a 30 cent per hour across-the-board raise, a 2.07% based wage increase. Anthony Spergettis, Waterloo School's Chief Human Resources Officer, said both of the tentative agreements are expected to come before the board for approval on Monday. And now on to today's obituaries. James J. Sweeney, Jr., 87, of Waterloo, died Sunday, May 5th, at his home. He was born March 3, 1937, in Elma. He married Joyce Olendiek on September 18, 1956, in Cresco. Jim was employed with Rath Packing Company and then with John Deere until his retirement in 1997. He was a member of the Fourth Degree Knights of Columbus. He also managed the bar at the Knights of Columbus Hall. There will be a Fourth Degree Knights of Columbus Rosary at 3:30 p.m. Thursday, May 9th, followed by visitation from 4 to 7 p.m. at Haggerty Wyckoff Grarup Funeral Service on South Street. Mass of Christian Burial will take place at 10:30 a.m. Friday, May 10th at Sacred Heart Catholic Church, with entombment in the Mount Olivet Cemetery Mausoleum. Visitation also 1 hour prior to the Mass on Friday at the church. Memorials may be directed to the family for an organization to be determined. Lorna Bosick Blone, 90, of the Western Home Communities of Cedar Falls, passed away peacefully on Friday, May 3, 2024. A celebration of life will be held at Trinity Bible Church in Cedar Falls on Thursday, May 9th from 4 to 7. There will be a short memorial service at 4, and we invite everyone after to share memories and help us celebrate Lorna's life. James Hambone Carter departed this life peacefully on May 3rd of natural causes at Unity Point Allen Hospital. He was born on May 18th, 1951, in Schlatter, Mississippi. He was educated at Amanda Elsey High School in Greenwood, Mississippi. James embraced the value of hard work early on, beginning his career at the age of 15 at the cotton gin in Itabena, Mississippi. His path led him to St. Louis, Missouri, where he briefly contributed his skills at Bethesda Hospital before settling in Waterloo. Among his myriad of talents, James found his professional calling as a skilled carpenter, a craft he honed and excelled in throughout his life. Services will be held on Monday, May 13th at 12 noon, with a viewing from 11 a.m. to noon at Haggerty Wyckoff Grarup Funeral Services, Ridgeway Avenue in Waterloo. The family will receive friends at 553 Ryle Street. Deborah Anne Carthen, 66, of Fort Dodge, passed away at her home on Friday, April 26th. Memorial services will be held at 10 a.m. on Friday, May 10th at the Chapel of Deer Creek Apartments in Fort Dodge. Visitation will be held from 9 to 10 a.m. prior to the service. Following the services in Fort Dodge, a graveside service will be held at 2:30 p.m. at the Waterloo Memorial Park Cemetery. Deborah Ann Blocker was born on April 21st, 1958. She graduated from West Waterloo High School in 1976 and later from Allen School of Nursing. Deb moved to the Chicago area and completed her BSN at Purdue. Deb was united in marriage to Ernest Carthen, and they made their home in Steger, Illinois. Deb was employed as a pediatric nurse and home health nurse before moving to Fort Dodge. Memorials may be left to the discretion of the family. Donald T. Doyle, 56, of Independence, died Saturday, May 4th, at his home in Independence. Donald was born on April 9th, 1968, in Independence. He attended the Independence Community Schools and was a 1968 graduate of Jefferson High School. Don went on to enlist in the United States Navy in 1987. He was stationed on the USS Saratoga and served during the Gulf War. After Don was honorably discharged from the Navy in 1991, he returned to Independence. Don went on to study to be an electrician at Hawkeye Community College and graduated in 2008. He soon took a job as an electrician at John Deere in Waterloo. He spent over 15 years maintaining the machines and buildings. Don served for several years as a union steward for UAW 838. He was a member of VFW Post 2440 and the American Legion Post 30 in Independence. Visitation will be held from 12 p.m. until 2 p.m. on Friday, May 10th at the Rife Family Center Funeral Home in Independence. A memorial service will be held at 2 p.m. on Friday at the funeral home. A celebration of life will be held from 4 until 7 p.m. at Denali's Restaurant in Independence after the services on Friday. Patricia Hansen, 89, of Old Wine, died May 7th. Funeral services will be held at 10:30 a.m. Saturday, May 11th, at the Zion Lutheran Church in Old Wine. Interment will be at Floral Hills Memorial Gardens in rural Old Wine. Pastor Roger McKinstry, 81, passed away peacefully on Sunday, May 5th at the Cedar Valley Hospice Home in Waterloo. Visitation will be from 4 to 7 p.m. on Thursday, May 9th at Faith Lutheran Church in Marion. Funeral service will be from 11 a.m. on Friday, May 10th at Faith Lutheran Church in Marion, with visitation before from 9:30 to 10:30 a.m. A luncheon will follow at the church. Roger was born on February 15, 1943, in Worcester, Massachusetts. He attended Worcester schools, graduating from the Worcester State Teachers College in 1972. Roger married Carolyn Riegel in 1968, and they lived in northern New Hampshire, where Roger was a teacher until 1980. His wife Caroline died in 1977, and in 1980, Roger entered Trinity Lutheran Seminary, getting ordained in 1984. As a pastor, he served congregations in West Union, Ossian, Tripola, Lamont, Dundee, Ryan, and Earlville. He retired from full-time ministry in 2010, but filled in at churches until 2019. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be made to the family. Dolores Yeska, 101 years old, of Trier, died May 2nd. Funeral services will be Friday, May 10th at 11 a.m. at St. Paul Catholic Church in Trier. Burial will be at Blessing Cemetery in Hudson. James L. Neiman, 87, passed away peacefully on Monday, May 6th at Community Memorial Hospital in Sumner. Funeral services will be held at 10:30 a.m. Saturday, May 11th at St. John Lutheran Church in Sumner. Interment will follow at St. John Lutheran Church Cemetery in rural Sumner. The visitation will be held from 3 to 7 p.m. on Friday, May 10th at Becker and Son Funeral Home in Sumner and for 1 hour preceding services at the church on Saturday. Memorials may be made in Jim's name to St. John Lutheran Church, SEMS, or St. Croix Hospice. Jim was born December 26, 1936. He graduated from Sumner High School in 1954, where he was a star athlete in basketball, track, where he held a school record for many years, and football. Upon graduation, he attended Wartburg College. In 1956, he joined his father in the family business, Paul Neiman Construction, as a quarry truck driver, a link belt shovel operator, and various other positions, learning the business at his father's hand. In 1979, Jim's father, Paul, was killed in a car accident, and Jim was thrust into the leadership role of Paul Neiman Construction. He served as director of the Iowa Limestone Producers. Jim sold Paul Neiman Construction in 2019 after 90 years as a family business. At the closing of the business, PNC employed 70 people, had numerous quarries, and was one of the largest producers of crushed stone, sand, and gravel in the state. Jim also had a role in the machinery used in his business. He often consulted with J.W. Bell Engineers, helping design and streamline construction equipment that he could use in his own business. He was involved in the creation of a secondary crushing plant and overhead conveyor. He also redesigned the hood of a primary crusher. Jim was proud of the Sumner community and supported many of the area industries. He was a lifelong member of St. John Lutheran Church and served on various councils throughout the years. Jim was chosen to be Grand Marshal of Sumner Days in 2014 and was honored with a plaque at the Cindy Potratz Memorial Park. Jason Rourke, 95, of Fairbank, died on Saturday, May 4th, at the new Aldea Lifescapes in Cedar Falls. Joan was born on April 12, 1929, in Gilbertville. She attended the Immaculate Conception, now Don Bosco, Catholic School in Gilbertville. In 1947, Joan graduated from high school and moved to Waterloo. She soon started working in the billing department at the Rath Packing Company in Waterloo. Joan enjoyed going out dancing with friends and one night met Patrick O'Rourke at the Electric Park Ballroom. They were married on September 27, 1954. Together, they made their home on a farm just outside of Fairbank. In 1956, Joan stopped working at Rath Packing to raise her children. A Mass of Christian Burial will be held at 3 p.m. on Thursday, May 9th, at Immaculate Conception Catholic Church in Fairbank. Interment will be held at Immaculate Conception Cemetery in Fairbank. A celebration of life will be held at the American Legion Hall in Fairbank after the services on Thursday. Dinner will be served from 4:30 to 6:30 p.m. Hy-Vee is voluntarily recalling two varieties of its Hy-Vee cream cheese spread and its bulk packaged cookies and cream mix due to the potential for contamination with salmonella. The company said in a news release that this was being done out of an abundance of caution. There have been no confirmed reports of adverse reactions due to consumption of any of these products. These products are manufactured at different third-party facilities around the Midwest and are sold under Hy-Vee's private label and bulk packaging programs, according to the release. The manufacturers of these products notified Hy-Vee of the potential issue. The affected products were distributed to Hy-Vee, Hy-Vee Drugstore, and Dollar Fresh Market locations, as well as Hy-Vee Fast and Fresh convenience stores across the company's 8-state region. No other varieties of Hy-Vee cream cheese or bulk packaged items are affected by this recall. The recalled products are labeled as follows. Hy-Vee Whipped Cream Cheese Spread, 8 ounce, used by dates of 8/7/24 and 8/14/2024. Hy-Vee Cream Cheese Spread, 12 ounce, used by date of 10/1/24. Hy-Vee To-Go Cookies and Cream Mix, 4 ounce, used by date of 12/5/2024, lot numbers 24073 and 24117. Hy-Vee To-Go Cookies and Cream Mix, 4 ounce, used by date 12/1/2024, lot number 24101. Hy-Vee Cookies and Cream Mix, 16 ounce, used by date of 12/5/24, lot numbers 24073 and 24117. Hy-Vee Cookies and Cream Mix, 16 ounce, used by date 12/1/2024, lot number 24101. Customers who purchase the products should dispose of or return it to the store for a full refund. Contact Hy-Vee Customer Care representatives with questions at 800-772-4098 from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. Central Time, Monday through Friday, and 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. on Saturday and Sunday. New features at Gates Park will open this summer after a transformation project began more than 2 years ago. The park, located at 820 East Donald Street, will open its inclusive playground and splash pad in the early summer. Paul Huding, Waterloo's Leisure Services Director, presented the plans to the Blackhawk County Board of Supervisors on Tuesday. The spray area will be the park's water feature since the pool was filled in. The inclusive playground includes structures to be used by people of any capabilities. A specific opening date has not been announced. The former pool area will have basketball courts with a roller skating rink on the perimeter and an amphitheater. The basketball court is currently under construction and footings were just placed for the amphitheater. At South Gates, off of Leicester Street, there will be a basketball court and playground. The project also includes a new prairie garden with a soccer field. Both the Gates and Burns Park's pools were studied in 2021. The city decided that the pools, which are more than 40 years old, needed major changes. This resulted in nearly $20 million project for the parks, originally estimated at $16 million. Private funding and grants account for about $12.5 million of the cost. More than $7 million will come from the city through bonds, tax increment financing district funds, and stormwater and sanitary sewer funds. This summer will be the last summer for the current Burns Park pool, located at 801 Campbell Avenue. The pool has experienced many infrastructure problems in recent years. After the summer season, construction will begin on the new pool, which is 1 year behind schedule. The entire aquatic facility will include a four-lane, 25-yard lap pool, slide tower diving board, a zero-depth entry play pool with spray features, a new bathhouse, and concessions, more shading and seating, and new infiltration and water quality facilities. And in some upcoming sporting events, college softball today, MVC Tournament Quarterfinals, Drake or Evansville versus Northern Iowa at 4 p.m. Class 4A State Qualifier Track and Field, Cedar Falls, Waterloo West at Dubuque Senior at 4 p.m. Also in track and field, Class 4A state qualifier, Waterloo East at Iowa City High. And in Class 1A, the state qualifier, Valley Lutheran and Waterloo Christian at Belle Plain at 4 p.m. And in a Class 2A state qualifier, Columbus Catholic will be at Denver at 4 p.m. And that does it for today's reading of the Waterloo Cedar Falls Courier for Thursday, May 9th, 2024. I'm your reader, Grace Barter. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website, iowaradioreading.org, at any time. Thanks for listening.
In Africa, 5-year-old Charu has no choice. She and millions like her must walk miles every day for dirty water. But together, we can end their walk by providing clean water close by. Instead of spending hours walking to get water that makes them sick, girls can be in a classroom that expands their minds, and moms will gain back time to care for their families. Sons and daughters can grow up strong, finally free of sicknesses caused by dirty water. At World Vision, care about clean water runs deep. Deep enough to reach one new person with clean water every 10 seconds. Because every child, every person, everywhere deserves clean water and the chance to rise to their full potential. It's true. When you just add water, you change a life. Learn more at worldvision.org.